since 1775, generations of Americans have fought for our ideals and our principles. American warriors secured the freedoms to create the United States of America. They fought to end slavery. They joined with allies to win two world wars. They have responded with valor and honor whenever called. And they have liberated more people around the globe than any military in the history of the world. Our all-volunteer forces of guardsmen, soldiers, sailors, marines, airmen, and reservists continue the mission begun at Lexington and Concord. Less than 1% of Americans serve in our armed forces. The least the rest of us can do is to pay attention and get engaged. This program is produced and broadcast for that purpose. It is presented live and worldwide at 1041thetruth.com. To engage, call 520-751-1041. The American Warrior is on the air.
Good afternoon, folks. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia, here for another wonderful episode of American Warrior Radio. Hey, stick around. We've got some great guests here going to be in the studio with us the next hour or two, and I think you're really, really going to enjoy what they're here, I have to say. Unscripted live. One of my guests has warned me. He says what's right on his mind, so I think you'll enjoy it. You know, we would like to start off talking about history a little bit, because I think folks tend to forget that, and that's a big mistake. So let me start today's program off with some stories for you. It's August 16th, 1881, in the Cuchillo Negro Mountains. That's the Black Knife translation for those of you who don't speak Spanish in New Mexico. And I'm reading from the notes of Lieutenant George Burnett with the 9th Cavalry. He says, during the fight, a horse of Private Burton became unmanageable and carried the private directly into Indian fire. To avoid this, Burton dropped from his saddle, injured and inactive. Assumed dead, the command was given to all fall back and take another position. But Burton was still alive, called out for help, and asked to be rescued. This, without regard for his own safety under enemy fire, another private went to Private Burton's assistance and brought him to safety. Now let's move forward 17 years later during the Battle of Las Guasimas outside of San Diego, Cuba. Major Bell of the 1st Cavalry went down with a wound to the leg. Captain C.G. Ayers attempted to carry him from the field, but the shattered leg bone broke through the skin and caused so much pain that Ayers had to be let down again. Once again, a private stepped up. The fire was so intense, folks, that on a plot of ground only 50 square feet, that's smaller than the studio we're standing in right now, 16 men were killed or wounded. But this private knew there was a fellow American soldier in need of assistance, and compassion overcoming his desire for self-preservation, this private ran out to help and helped drag Major Bell to safety. The key participant in both of these stories was a private by the name of Augustus Wally. Now, Private Wally was born into slavery on March 10, 1856. And for his actions and the action against the Indians in 1881, he was awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor and was recommended for a second Medal of Honor for his actions in Cuba. Let me tell you another story. On January 24, 1877, in the Florida Mountains, once again in New Mexico, there was a small detachment that was dispatched to persuade a band of renegade Apaches to surrender. But rather than surrender, the Apaches decided to fight. A much larger force of Apaches soon surrounded that cavalry detachment. But in the savage hand-to-hand combat, a corporal by the name of Clinton Greaves managed to shoot and literally bash his way out and create a gap through the swarming enemy, which allowed his companions to break free. For his actions that day, he was awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor, and there's a camp, an army installation in Korea, named after this gentleman. Ladies and gentlemen, the thing these two men have in common is they are both Buffalo Soldiers, the famous Buffalo Soldiers. Now, legendary, I would say part of legend, but I wanted to, you know, it's African American History Month, but I really want to talk about, and I've got guests in today to talk about the Buffalo Soldiers, because a lot of Tucsonans don't realize what a huge, huge part of our Southern Arizona history these men played. And so today we'll be talking Buffalo Soldiers, we'll be talking history, we'll be talking young people, we'll be talking about all that stuff. And I'm joined in the studio here today by Aaron Plum. Aaron Plum is with the 10th Cavalry Troop B Foundation, whose motto is Ready and Forward. Correct, Aaron?
That's right.
And we'll also be joined by Bill McCurtis, who is the founder of the Headquarter Troop, 9th Memorial Cavalry, whose motto is We Can, We Build. We Can, We Will. So, Aaron, let's start with you. Number one, thank you for your service. You served many years in our United States Navy. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. I served 23 years in the Navy. I was a Chief Petty Officer. I'm originally from Alabama, and in Alabama, the future was either working in a mine or a steel mill, which didn't appeal to me. So at 17, I joined the Navy, And I was too young, actually too young to go in. My dad had to sign for me, which he did. And so I stayed in for 23 years. It really helped me a lot. It gave me a way out. And I don't advocate, you know, people join the military, but I think if you have nothing better to do, that's the way to go.
Now, you said you went to eight times to Vietnam. Oh my gosh! And you were on an aircraft carrier, correct?
Yes, I was.
What was your role there?
I worked flight deck, which is probably one of the most dangerous jobs in the Navy on an aircraft carrier. The aircraft carrier carried approximately 3,000 men. We didn't have women on the carriers at that time, but they do have them now. But back in those days, we had about 3,000 guys, and in my squadron, which was the A-4 Skyray attack squadron, and we operated in North Vietnam most of the time.
Now, A-4, was that what Senator McCain flew?
Yes, it was.
The right aircraft?
Matter of fact, he was aboard my ship when he went in.
Oh, no, on his last, before he shut down?
That's
wow.
Right.
Yeah. Well, there's a little piece of history.
Yep.
Now, one thing that I find interesting in talking about, and we'll have Bill chime in here in a second, but, you know, you talked about joining the military because you didn't have any options. Historically speaking, for many of the Buffalo soldiers, was that, and is doing the research and seeing some of the documentaries, one of the things that the military offered was a job. Education, an opportunity when back in those days there just wasn't any much available.
Right. They made $13 a month,
wow,
which was a lot of money back in that period. The Buffalo Soldier actually came in existence in 1866. The 39th Congress authorized the Army to form two cavalry, which would be the 9th and 10th, and four infantry, 38, 39, 40, and 41, 41st. The 40 and 41st later on became the 24th and 25th infantry, which is still in existence today.
Now, so that's something else. I think a lot of us, when we talk about them, or we think about the Buffalo Soldiers, we strictly think about cavalry. But there were also infantry group. Now, did they operate independently, or in concert with the cavalry, or did it just really sort of depend on the situation?
Well, the Native American gave them that name because in the Native American culture, the buffalo is held in high esteem. And at first, maybe the buffalo, the soldiers probably took it as a downer, but later on they figured it's really a sign of respect. And so they wore it proudly. And the other units took that name also. If you talk to anybody in those outfits now, they understand the legacy.
Okay. We're going to talk, folks, we're going to talk more about the history of the Buffalo Soldiers and get back with some more stories and some more great tales. Stick around. We'll be right back after this break.
Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it. Now, back to the American Warrior.
And we're back in American Warrior, folks. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking Buffalo Soldiers, and we're joined by two Buffalo Soldiers, if you will. Well, one Buffalo Navy man. I don't know how you say that. Buffalo Sailor?
That'll work.
Listen, I want to tell you another story. June 30th, 1898, near Trinidad, Cuba. American forces aboard the USS Florida dispatched, and this is for you, Aaron, USS Florida Navy, dispatched a landing party to provide reconnaissance on Spanish outposts in the area. The party, however, was discovered by Spanish scouts, and pretty soon that scout group came under heavy enemy fire. The fire destroyed their boats, which left them stranded there without hope of rescue. The Florida attempted four rescue attempts, but each was forced to retreat under withering enemy fire. That evening, Private Dennis Bell, joined by four other privates from the 10th Cavalry, volunteered to make another attempt, this time at night. They found and successfully rescued the stranded members of the landing party, returning them to the Florida safe and sound. Private Bell and his four compatriots were awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor 1 year later. And they, were Buffalo soldiers with the 10th Cavalry. Bill, we've talked a little bit about Aaron and his background. Bill, you are the founder of the headquarter troop, 9th Memorial Cavalry. The motto was, we can, we will, and you were a former Army tank commander. So, Bill, chime in. Welcome to American Warrior. Tell us a little bit more about where you're from, what your background is.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the invitation. Well, I guess you could say I sort of come from a military background. Of course, a lot of it I didn't learn about until after I started doing Buffalo Soldier History. I had seen some of my uncles in uniform, and some of the uniforms looked extremely strange.
Okay.
And it brings back some really sharp memories. Because when you get into the Buffalo Soldier History, and you see what these men were up against.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not just talking racism, but getting acceptance around the world. It's a phenomenal story. And then I get to think that two of my uncles were part of that. And I've got a great, great granduncle that has a Medal of Honor.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow. What's his name?
His name is Moses Williams.
And tell us about that.
Well, Moses first joined the 9th Cav at Greenville, Louisiana. He's one of the originals.
Uh-huh.
And after they moved west, Moses finally rose up through the ranks to first sergeant of I Troop. And just a little bit before then, in an engagement where the officer was killed, Moses fought a retreating action, saved quite a few of the men in the company, and he was awarded the Medal of Honor. But I think the thing that stands out about that man, he was the Army's first black ordnance sergeant.
Hmm.
And it was such an honor to be able to go back to Aberdeen in 2000, I believe it was 2007, they inducted him into their Ordnance Hall of Fame, the Army's Ordnance Department's Hall of Fame. And, of course, the powers that be just kind of told me, oh, we looked all over the place to see if we could find somebody that could come and accept the award. And you know how the Army is. They won't tell you everything. Hurry up and wait. Some things never change.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was a huge honor for me to do that. And, you know, I'm sitting there at the ceremony, and I'm talking to this guy beside me. And then all of a sudden it hits me. This is the great, great, great grandson of General O.O. Howard.
Mm.
And it's like, whoa. This guy retired a 3-star, you know, a lieutenant general.
Mm-hmm.
And he's being inducted, or rather accepting the induction for General Howard. And I'm right next to him. And I mean, this is just, wow. But after that thing was over, I mean, my wife got a call from the Assistant Secretary of the Army. And he finally told her why they picked me to come and make that, accept that honor. And it seems that when I was born in Chicago, I was adopted a year later by the Williams family in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Wow.
And I was raised in Arkansas. And that was Moses, some of his descendants. So I'm the last surviving descendant.
Great connection.
Yeah.
Great connection. Now, we were talking a little bit about, just again to set the stage,
mm-hmm.
the historical perspective of the Buffalo Soldiers. And, you know, I think it was, Bill, you told me something as we were preparing for this show, and it really struck me. And it's the phrase that really in one sentence sort of describes what we're talking about here with the history of these men. They had to fight to volunteer in order to fight.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So tell us both, and just feel free, you know, chime in, grab the mic when you want, guys. And so let's talk about the Western history here, and just correct me, you're the experts, but correct me if I'm wrong. 187,000 African Americans served in the Union Army during the Civil War. Does that sound accurate?
That's pretty close.
About 180,000.
Close, yeah.
And as you mentioned, Aaron, just shortly after that, Congress decided to keep the 9th and 10th Cavalry. to continue them forward after the Civil War?
Well, sure. Actually, they were called the U.S. Colored Troops during the Civil War. But, and a lot of people may not realize that also blacks fought for the Confederate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we were already veterans when the 9th and 10th came about.
Now, and again, just based on the research I could find on the interweb, as I like to call it, coming out west after the Civil War, for many, we talked a little bit, for many of the African Americans, the opportunity to serve, serving was an opportunity to get an education, to get paid. You mentioned, I think it was $13 a month, which I guess was a lot of money back then. Hey, 13 bucks is 13 bucks, but almost 20% of the soldiers serving out here on the frontier in the west were African American soldiers. I think a lot of folks over maybe don't know that or overlook that.
Well,
is that number low? Is that number
high? No. The number is close to correct. But what I try to do in teaching this history and keeping up with my military heritage, you learn. You can't use. You don't use titles.
Okay.
And believe it or not, the younger kids understand that. The 9th Cav, the only thing they wanted to be recognized as is American fighting men. There was nothing about colored,
mm-hmm,
or Negro or African American in there. And, you know, you take that oath and you begin to understand what they were talking about. You're the line of defense, the first line of defense for your country. You don't have time to go into ethnicity. That's all they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
They knew they could fight. They knew they were going to be the best at it. Just recognize them as American fighting men.
Yeah, and the conflicts out here out west, and I think that's, Aaron and I were talking this a little, mm-hmm, bit going on the show, how often the media, if you will, the films and some of the stories that reflect some of the history of the West don't necessarily accurately reflect the role.
Right.
And it's not just the Indian Wars. We're talking about just the infrastructure out west here, telegraphs, mm-hmm, roads, protecting the border. You know, people forget that we had some real issues with Mexico at that point in time, and Pancho Villa and bandits coming back and forth across the border. There was a lot going on down
good
here.
Lord, yes.
And in most cases, the Buffalo Soldiers, they were it. They were the firemen, they were the policemen, they were the soldiers. It was it. That's who you're going to call, right?
Yeah.
Is that?
Don't say Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
First line of defense.
There is one movie that came out of Hollywood, I believe it was 59 or 60, that is 99.9% true. A lot of people don't realize it. The title is Sergeant Rutledge.
Hmm. Okay.
The actual star of that movie lived right here in Tucson. Woody Strode. John Ford took a chance on losing his career to make that movie. And it's about the court-martial of First Sergeant Braxton Rutledge, 9th Cav, in a murder case. And that happened right up there at the Hubble Trading Post off of Interstate 40 in Arizona.
Mm-hmm. In northern Arizona, right.
That whole movie is 99.9% true.
There you go, folks. If you want to see the truth, look it up. Sergeant Rutledge, I'm sure you can find it on Netflix or somewhere else. Let's talk about one other thing that we were talking about before that is often overlooked. And one of my favorites, they used to say about Teddy Roosevelt, that he never went to a wedding where he didn't wish he was the bride. He never went to a funeral where he didn't wish he was the corpse. And the famous Battle of San Juan and the Rough Riders, and not to take anything away from that story, but folks don't know that there was 1,250 other troops involved in that battle, and they were with
whom? Buffalo Soldiers.
Buffalo Soldiers. 9th and 10th both, or just the 10th? Or
well, the way the battle plan looks that I have from the originals, basically the Rough Riders were kind of in the center, at least the contingent of the Rough Riders. To their left was the 10th Cav. Left of them, I believe, was either the 9th colored volunteer infantry or the 24th. I have to go back and be, you know, check my paperwork and be absolutely sure. And then on the right.
Finish with that.
On the right was definitely the 25th Infantry.
Okay.
The first person to start up that hill, and you can't charge up it because you've got trench lines.
Right, right.
So there's no way you're going to ride a horse. The first person to start up that hill was a trooper of the 10th Cav.
Wonderful. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. This is your host, Ben Bueller-Garcia. I'm joined by Bill McCurtis with the Headquarter Troop 9th Memorial Cavalry and Aaron Plum, 10th Cavalry Troop B Foundation. We're talking Buffalo Soldiers. Great stuff. I'm sure a lot you never knew. Stick around.
To reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it. Now, back to the American Warrior on 104.1 The Truth.
We're back on American Warrior, folks. This is your host, Ben Bueller-Garcia. We're talking Buffalo Soldiers today. I'm joined by Bill McCurtis and Aaron Plum. And listen, if you have a question or a comment or would just like to ask something or about the issue, give us a call, 751-1041. We are live in the studio and accepting phone calls. And gentlemen, just before the break, we were talking about some of the little-known history of the Buffalo Soldiers. In particular, we were just talking a little bit about the famous the Cuban-Spanish-American War, Cuba. I told the story about a 10th cavalryman who was actually aboard of a ship, went out to help rescue some of his compatriots there on shore. But and Bill, you made an interesting comment. Again, we think about the 9th and 10th as a cavalry unit, which they were. But in that situation at San Juan, there was no horse. You couldn't be charging up the hill. It was a hard, long slog, right?
Right.
Inch at a time.
Right. The main thing about that is, you know, this is the first time the United States Army used a bolt-action rifle, the 30-40 Krag Jorgensen. Great rifle. But we still loaded those bullets with black powder. So you pull the trigger on it, and that bullet goes off. You get a big cloud of smoke.
Mm.
While the Spanish were using the European Mauser with smokeless powder. But amid all of that black powder smoke, that gave us kind of a screen. And when that 10th Cavalryman started up the hill, somebody over with the Rough Riders said, hey, look, the 10th's going up. They must have been ordered up. So they got up. Next thing you know, it's a steady walk. And can you imagine the hail of bullets these guys are walking through?
Mm-hmm. And coming down the hill.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the first one into that blockhouse was a sergeant of the 24th Infantry. It was the first one in.
Another little unknown fact was the Rough Rider was on the wrong hill. There was over Keller Hill.
No, that's a mistake.
Well,
there was still some at Kettle because that battle had taken place before. And Teddy was in a hurry to get over there to San Juan because he knew that one was finna jump off.
Well, that's the one we talk about most of the time.
There were two battles,
yeah. And I, in researching this, I read about that. I kind of made this quote about Teddy Roosevelt, God rest his soul. You know, I mean, this guy took his own publishers into battle with him. But what I found was that yes, first battle. He looks over there and he sees another mm-hmm. battle going. He's like, "Hey, let's go join in on that." And it was funny. He said, "That's this is the lesson you learn of when you how did it go? When you lead the charge, you turn around and find out nobody's behind you." I mean, he takes off charging over this next hill. He looks back. There's only five guys with him. He had to go back and kind of regroup. And that's the way the story goes.
You got to get Teddy his props. Here, this man was Assistant Secretary of the Navy. He gives that position up to go fight.
And you know how those Navy guys can be. Right, Aaron?
Yeah, you better believe it.
I said a word.
Take charge.
But not just Teddy. For somebody that had never really been in uniform, mm-hmm. I think the man did brilliant. I really do. He led from the front, which was normal back then. If you were an officer, led your men from the front.
Right.
So, no, I have no problem with Teddy Roosevelt. But then, too, very few people know that some of the finest generals that had fought in the Civil War were in that fight. And that Spanish-American War is what put the United States on the path to being recognized as a world power. And the majority of that fell on the shoulders of the Buffalo soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
But you had Robert E. Lee's nephew in that fight. We were commanded, the 9th Cav was commanded by General Joe Wheeler, one of the South's most brilliant cavalry commanders. Little Billy fella couldn't bend no more than 4'4". But do you know when Joe had to make his testimony in front of Congress after that action was over, and he got to the part about leading those black soldiers, that man was in tears.
Mm.
He said, as long as God gives me the breath, I will never say anything derogatory about black troops again.
That brings me to a next subject I want to just sort of broach, is those men who helped. Colonel Robert Gould Shaw, the famous 54th Massachusetts, eventually Brigadier General John Pershing, who I think was also in Cuba, if I'm not mistaken.
As a lieutenant.
He volunteered for the 10th Cavalry, if I'm not mistaken. From your perspective, gentlemen, what about the role of those who helped, who stepped up, who took, I don't want to say they took a risk, but they said, no, these are good soldiers. I'm proud to lead them. I'm happy to lead them anytime.
Well, first, you got to do some separation here.
Okay.
You have to. From the Revolutionary War to the Civil War, we all volunteered. We were all volunteers. And it was only after the Civil War that we became regular troops. The separation comes is, yeah, we served in the Civil War in separate regiments. We even had our own artillery batteries. But when the Army decided to form four regular troops, artillery wasn't included because we were considered not intelligent enough to be artillerymen. And ironically, the same thing happened when Patton went to save the 101st Airborne. The 761st All-Black Tank Battalion led that. And the Germans were kept off of the 101st's rear end by a black artillery unit that was almost wiped out. But you don't hear that.
I've got a good story about that I'll get to after the next break. So what about Colonel Shaw? And I mean, do you, from your perspective, what impact? Obviously, they had some impact, but
for the men that served in the Civil War.
Okay,
but that was the Civil War.
Well, I mean, as far as General Pershing, the Spanish-American War, pursuing Pancho Villa.
As far as General Pershing, from what I've read, and in my opinion, he did good. He got his promotion. He got his promotion. He did not earn the respect of a Colonel Edward Hatch.
And tell us who that was.
That was the man that put the 9th Cav together.
Okay.
And you don't know much about him. People know very little about him. During the Civil War, he led the 3rd, I believe it was either the 3rd or the 2nd Iowa Cavalry. And I believe it was U.S. Grant called him the Union's most brilliant cavalry commander.
Hmm.
And he was. He was prejudiced. He saw one color, Army blue. You served under that man. You soldiered under that man. He'd give his life for you. And those Buffalo soldiers of the 9th loved that man so much that when he passed in the late 1880s, the senior sergeants of the regiment would not allow anyone to take care of that body but them.
Mm.
And they took that body all the way to Fort Leavenworth.
Nice.
And the 9th stayed in mourning for an entire year.
Nice.
And unfortunately, General Pershing did not command that type of respect.
Interesting.
There's a lot of soldiers that couldn't reach that mark. I mean, that's a heck of a mark to reach. But you did have some.
Sure.
And that is part of what made these units esprit de corps.
And you, both of you gentlemen, you've served, so you know where of what you speak. You've served under different types of leadership, I'm sure. Aaron, what's your perspective on that question?
Well, going back to the Spanish-American War, also another officer that we're trying to bring some attention to would be Colonel Charles Young.
Yes.
Who
yes.
was also here in Arizona during the Mexican-American War, serving at Fort Huachuca, and also at down the coast here. What's the name of the place?
What, Columbus?
No. Mexico.
I can't even think of the name of it. See what you did to me?
It's radio. It's
Navy.
Right. Go on, Navy. Go on.
Anyway,
go on.
He was also he was sent to California. He was the superintendent of national parks,
mm-hmm.
Charles Young. Right now, there's a group of people from California and also Washington, D.C., who is trying to get a posthumous promotion for Colonel Young to go on to become general.
Brigadier General.
So there's a big fundraiser going on right now. Bill and I went back to D.C. last year to doing the commemoration of Colonel Charles Young. So we got to meet as some of his descendants, which was, wow, that was
fantastic.
Quite an experience.
Yeah.
We were standing in Alta National Cemetery where all these graves are. We went around and we looked at some of the grave sites. Another Medal of Honor recipient was Isaiah Mays, who was right here in Arizona also. We'll try to bring it back to Arizona.
Okay. Listen, folks, we're going to take another break. If you have a question, we've got two great guests here. Very opinionated, as you can tell, but also very informed. Give us a call, 751-1041. We're talking Buffalo Soldiers. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We'll be right back.
My daddy served in the Army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard till the day that he died. He wanted my mother, my brother, my sister, and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free.
If you want to discuss those who serve the red, white, and blue, dial 520-751-1041. If you want to support them, start with WoundedWarriorProject.org. Now, back to the American Warrior on 104.1 The Truth.
And we lit up your... And we're back, folks. It's amazing how quickly an hour passes. You know, we're going to have these fellows stick around. This is such great stories and a great resource. Adriana has called us. Adriana, I'm going to get you here in a second. Folks, if you have a question or comment, give us a call, 751-1041. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia on American Warrior. I'm joined by Bill McCurtis and Aaron Plum, and we're talking about Buffalo Soldiers. And Bill, just before, earlier in the program, you talked about the artillerymen and the comments about black soldiers serving the artillery. Let me read you a story. You've probably heard of this guy, but I want our listeners to hear about it. It's December 26, 1944, in Soma, Colonia, Italy. Lieutenant John R. Fox, who was a forward observer with the 598th Field Artillery Battalion. On Christmas night, the night before, German soldiers gradually infiltrated the town of Soma, Colonia in civilian clothes. By early the next morning, the town was largely in hostile hands, and it commencing with a heavy barrage of enemy artillery at 4 in the morning on the 26th of December, an organized attack by uniformed German troops began. Being greatly outnumbered, most of the United States infantry forces were forced to withdraw from the town. But Lieutenant Fox and some other members of his observer party voluntarily remained on the second floor of a house to direct defensive artillery fire. At 8 o'clock that morning, Lieutenant Fox reported that the Germans were in the streets and attacking in strength. He then called for defensive artillery fire to slow the enemy advance. As the Germans continued to press the attack towards the area that Lieutenant Fox occupied, he continued to adjust the artillery fire closer and closer to his position. Finally, he was warned that the next adjustment would bring the deadly artillery right on top of his own head, his own position. After acknowledging the danger, Lieutenant Fox insisted that the last adjustment be fired, as this was the only way to defeat the attacking German soldiers. Later, when a counterattack retook the position from the Germans, Lieutenant Fox's body was found alongside the bodies of approximately 100 German soldiers. Lieutenant Fox's gallant and courageous actions, the supreme sacrifice of his own life, contributed to delaying the enemy advance, saving the lives of his fellow soldiers, and for that, he was granted the Medal of Honor. There you go, Bill. Artillery.
Oh, yeah. Lieutenant Fox. Man, oh, man. You know, World War II, we did some phenomenal things. You know, it's like Sergeant Reuben Rivers with 761st. He had to get the battalion out of an ambush, and had the Germans had already took off half of his tank turn. He'd been wounded severely for 3 days, wouldn't go back and get medical aid. But to get the guys out of that trap, the gun went on his tank was still operable. The radio was still operable. Reuben fought that tank himself. His commanding officer got on the radio, told him, "Reuben, everybody's safe. Get out of there." He says, "I see him. I'll fight him."
Wow. There's a good quote right there.
The whole thing is people don't realize.
Well, that's why I think it's important to tell these stories. It's important for people to hear these stories. So,
it is.
Hey, Adriana, you're calling American Warrior. What's your question or comment?
Well, my comment is to say that I'm very humbled as an American, first of all, for the proud history that they have. And the second part of that is that I am part of Miss in America Project, which is this national organization that takes unclaimed veterans and gives them their honorable burial. And we're very, very honored to have them be a part of our mission. And I just want to let them know publicly, you know, that we really appreciate the support that you give them.
Okay, thank you, Adriana. Your phone was breaking up a little bit there, but she was talking about the Missing in America Project, and I assume she meant that the Buffalo soldiers participate in those repatriations of the remains.
Oh, yeah.
Your organization's as a...
I'm going to be honest with you. Very few of those organizations give us a call.
Well,
very few.
Let's do that right now. You've got the ears of thousands of listeners. How do they reach you? What's the website? What's the Facebook page? How do they reach you?
Well, you can reach the Ninth Cav at info@ninthcav.com.
Okay. And now that address is unique in that it's not the numeral 9, it's spelled out, correct? Ninth, N-I-N-T-H.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Info@ninthcav.com. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Aaron?
Yeah. No, we very seldom get requests to come speak. In Arizona, we spoke at the Steam Pump Ranch in Oil Valley, a couple schools here, veterans organization. But we're willing and able to go to any of those schools. I'm retired, a truck driver, but we have the time to do it. And we really would like people to give us a call.
And I got to tell you, folks, this is radio, but both these gentlemen are here in uniform. And it's very, very impressive. Let's talk a little bit about that, because there is some frustration that I have as someone who really, really believes in history. And someone told me once that Fort Huachuca, there's lots of places that claim to be the one point for the Buffalo soldiers. But the comment is that every one of those troops was at Fort Huachuca at some point in time, and there's no other post that can claim that. Is that an accurate statement?
Absolutely. And that's almost true today. It's almost true today, because if you know anything about Fort Huachuca, and you see all those antennas and stuff stuck up on that mountain, people, leave it alone.
What you say. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, leave it alone.
Now, but that comes back to Fort Huachuca is in Sierra Vista, Arizona. Sierra Vista, Arizona is in southern Arizona. And
absolutely,
one of the frustrations that I have is that folks just don't know this. They don't understand the huge impact that these men played in the development of and the settling of this part of our country.
Well, maybe I can clear this up. For people that are looking to put these regiments in a home, in a place of origin, the best thing to say is the 9th Cav was put together in New Orleans, Louisiana. And that was the first one. The 10th Cav was put together, actually started at Fort Riley, but moved to Fort Leavenworth to finish being assembled. That was the second one. The infantry units were consolidated from four post-Civil War units. So the 25th Infantry came together in New Orleans. The 24th Infantry came together at Fort McCabot, Texas, which is right in the center of Texas. Now, places like Fort Huachuca, that was basically a way station for transferring troops. I'm very glad at least people recognize that place. But nobody recognizes a place like Fort Stockton, Texas. It sits in the middle of the Great Comanche War Trail. That's the first duty station of the 9th Cav. Nobody realizes it. This is why Aaron and I do this. Our hearts are in this. You have too many people out here pretending they don't do the research. Mm. And that's something I won't have. I will not have.
Now, you were a drill sergeant, weren't you?
Yes, sir.
Okay. It's starting to show through a little bit.
Oh, God.
Still is.
I comment, you guys are both here in uniform. Those things look pretty heavy, pretty hot. Let's talk about just the on the ground there. And let me just see if I find my notes here. Somewhere I read a quote. Here we go. There was a gentleman that was talking about the performance of the Buffalo Soldiers. And this is William Leckie was writing about it. He says, look, poor meals, like poor horses, were constant companions of the Negro troopers. The post surgeon at Fort Concho, here in Arizona, put it bluntly. The food was inferior to that provided at other posts. The bread was sour, beef of poor quality, and the canned peas not fit to eat.
Mm-hmm.
There were none of the staples common at other posts. Molasses, canned tomatoes, dried apples, dried peaches, sauerkraut, potatoes, or even onions. The butter was made of suet, and there was only enough flour for the officers. Certainly, there were no visions of a sumptuous repast in the minds of worn-out troopers coming into Concho after days or weeks in the field. Talk about just life in the desert's hard enough.
Of course.
Much less when you're not supplied equally. What, from your history and what you guys have experienced and your reenactments, tell us about, what was sort of the life, the daily life of a Buffalo Soldier like here in southern Arizona, if you could describe that for our listeners.
Well, for one thing, infantry walked everywhere. Cavalry got a chance to ride.
Mm-hmm.
People talking about poor this and poor that and poor the other. Well, yeah. The government is stingy. They hang on to everything. A million horses left over from the Civil War, broken down. Guess who got them? Everybody. Not just Buffalo Soldiers. Even Custer got the broken down horses. Weapons? No. They never gave us inferior weapons.
Good.
Never. Okay. But the government's thing is you use up what we got first, then you get the new stuff.
We've got just a couple minutes before the break. Aaron, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, we understand that they did get some used stuff that wasn't quite up to par at first. But eventually they got the same thing everybody else got. And they took a lot of pride in their uniform. Some of the pictures you might see of guys all wearing beat up, dirty clothes. Well, you've been on the field for over 60 days, you will come back dirty.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's, folks, I think what we're going to do is we're going to hold these gentlemen over here into the next hour. So stick with us here in American Warrior. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 751-1041. Both of you, tell us again the contact information for your different organizations. Bill?
Mine is info@9thcav.com.
Okay. Aaron?
10th Cav Troop B Foundation or Mango House. MANGO 6, 9, P as in Papa, @ Q as in Quebec.com. Mango House 69P @ Q.com.
You're right, but Navy. You're right. How about we just say 10thcavtroopb.org? How's that?
That work.
Folks, we'll be right back. This is your host, Ben Bueller-Garcia. We're talking Buffalo Soldiers. Great show. Stick around.